All right, I'm going to share the screen for the slides, so I don't know if that's going to take away all the cool functionality of the OWL, but that's what's going to have to happen. Oops. It's not my fault. Can everybody see the slides?
Yep.
All right, so in the board packet is a memo and has some narrative in it. And then I just sent out early this afternoon some slides to walk through which are up on the screen here, and so you could refer back to those. But these are really just to guide the conversation and don't have any new information in them, just like I said, to kind of summarize what we're looking at. And then on the back of that memo, there's two versions of the capital budget. There's the capital budget that was presented and recommended by the Finance Committee. And then there's the capital budget that we're proposing today, and with some changes. We'll walk through what those look like. I think this will be repetitive for some of the Finance Committee folks, but I think it's a good idea to walk through some background items before we get into the meat of the numbers. Looking at the capital budgeting process today, and then looking at, I'll say, where we want to go with the capital budgeting process. So today, what we're staring at is in reality, our previous 2 years have just been broadsided by member-requested work. So we've had a huge and material increase in both the number of work orders and the amount of work from member-requested work. I don't think this impact is something to underplay. I think from a budgeting perspective, sitting in 2019, nobody expected 2020, and then in 2020, looking back at the narrative, I think we, you know, as an entity, OCEC thought 2020 was really just lightning in a bottle, and it wasn't going to repeat itself, and it did. And so I think that's just something to keep in mind as we're looking at what the budgets were and what actually happened on the ground. We've been reacting to those fluctuations, and really the amount of member requested work has been eating into getting to those system improvements. So Sarah, these are some of the system improvements that you pointed out, some of the other projects you pointed out as well. When we're getting to those, when we can, and they're really never is an ending point to the member requested work. It's delayed and pushed out some of those line item system improvements. Adding to that really is having no documented long-term construction / engineering work plan. So this is a, you know, very summary high level, five-year plan of the system improvements, the ongoing maintenance work that we're going to do on our system to ensure reliability and ensure that our system is in good working order. And that kind of leaves the difficulty executing on our identified system improvement projects.
Greg, just as an interjection here, I kind of think it might make sense to focus more on a 10-year plan. I mean, I know that every additional year out there's more uncertainty to it. But with things like vehicle replacement rollovers and so on, it seems like we would catch more stuff that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good comment. I don't think it's, I think 5 years is, at least from my experience, which is honestly very little, and we could talk to engineering firms about this. The 5-year plan was kind of that balance between things you know are going to happen and then things you know need to happen. But a 10-year plan, as you said, would probably line up better with what I think a good distance for financial model is, which is a 10-year financial model. So we could look at that. I think, as you said, it gets a little bit more fuzzy the further you go out in terms of what projects are and are not going to happen.
Just advertise the 5 to 10 year as speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely subject to modification as the years get closer.
So I think our goal really for capital budgeting process, what we want to get in front of the board for 2023, which seems far away, but it's not. We want to get a 5-year construction or engineering work plan put in, we'll say 5 to 10. We want to have clear metrics that we can apply to those projects in order to prioritize within that plan. So rather than coming and saying, these are the projects we're going to do, we're going to say, this is the amount of money we're looking for this capital budget year, and these are the metrics we're going to use. Projects may elevate or drop based on real-time information. And then tying that to a financial strategy and planning document, so that 10-year look for the finance side. I think those things in combination will be a good keystone for us to have that make it a lot easier to have conversations about what we're looking at long-term. And frankly, I think it'll give staff a little bit more flexibility to use those prioritizations and see where we need to go long term to move those projects around and get things done that we need to get done. I'll touch on this one other time, but one of the things that was an issue for this process is we do not have the key information that we contracted for from BKI Engineering. We contracted for it back in August of 2020, and at this point we're still exchanging data with them. As far as we could tell, we think they had to basically restart from the previous iteration that they started with us back in late 2020, early 2021. But the study is going, and we think we might get it by the end of the calendar year. But I think, as you heard, that study was really supposed to help specifically us prioritize the capital budget and the maintenance on the system and give us visibility into the Mazama circuit and loading there. So I want to highlight that we don't have that. Created some issues in terms of trying to really identify good projects for next year, but was a limiting factor there. Some of the key changes from the budget, and we'll go into these in a little bit more detail. We increased the amount of member requested work closer to our estimated 2-year average. We increased the amount of customer in aid of construction, or CIAC, correlated to that increase in member work. Again, still less than our estimated 2-year average, but we did increase it. We did leave one line item system improvement, the 2,500 feet of underground at Edelweiss. We plan to execute on that next year. That's in conjunction with that community's plan to replace some of their water infrastructure, I believe. And so it makes sense to share that and replace that as the ditches are being dug. And then we increase capital acquisition. So those are really driven by fleet, transformers, and meters. And if you looked ahead, we'll talk about transformers a little bit. Some basic assumptions to make sure we're all singing from the same song sheet. This budget doesn't consider CIAC or member work carried over from 2021. So this is a standalone, what do we think is going to get done in 2022 budget. So to the extent we carry over member work, which we will, to the extent we carry over CIAC associated with that member work, it's not going to be on top, or it's not going to be inclusive of this number. Sorry, it's not going to be on top of this number. This is the amount of work that we believe we're going to get done in 2022. So whether it came in this year and we're going to get to it next year, or whether it's requested next year, this budget represents just getting that work done in 2022. And then this budget obviously does not address funding decisions, whether we're funding this program from rates or from borrowing or a mixture of those two. We'll have to be looking at those decisions when we look at the full budget. So capital plus wholesale plus expense. All right, any questions there before we jump into some of the details?
So comments on, you know, relative to Sarah's question about items that aren't going to be done, OCEC projects that aren't going to be done. Where does that fit within the context of the 2022 budget here? Another way of asking that is, how much of the available crew time is going to be consumer or member-generated work versus outside of this 2,500 feet of Edelweiss URD is going to be co-op relevant work?
Yeah, so this budget, because of the increase in member work, and is really looking ahead and saying that our year next year is once again going to be dominated by member work projects during the construction season, with one identified system improvement being that Edelweiss project, and then there could be various different system improvements that we'll be able to look at and prioritize, similar to the Prospect Road, something where there's underground with many faults that is a known issue. But those are not going to be, the way we're looking at them is we're looking at a bucket of money to address system improvements as opposed to individual line items saying this is where we're going to do the work for the budgeting process.
So, Greg, I think you guys did an outstanding job this year dealing with fire, all of you, all the crew, everybody. However, I think we need to continue to harden the lines and put these things as high priority and to not do our pole inspections. We need to have our poles inspected. It's on a 10-year cycle, as I understand it. It can't go off and be not done. So those somehow need to be elevated. And if they have to go above, well, you have to bring somebody. I mean, the pole inspections are an outside organization, right, mm-hmm. Glenn? Aren't they?
I just wanted to step in there and clarify. Pole inspections were completed this year. Pole paint, which is a different project, we didn't get to that because of the early spring conditions when construction started right away. So the actual 10-year cycle of pole inspections was completed, like we normally do, but the pole paint, which is the fire retardant that we apply to certain sections of line, that is what didn't get completed. So that's the material, but we didn't have the time to do that.
So it just doesn't show that it was the money was spent. Is that right? I mean, Glenn, it doesn't show the $10,000 that usually did that get billed or what?
Yeah, we'll have to get with Lynn on that. But I've got the report from the pole testing guys that gave us their reports.
You did it, and you replaced the poles that needed replacing, and you're being careful that way.
There were three rejected poles. There were three poles that failed the inspection on that cycle, and those were replaced.
And the fire retardant, we just didn't get to it.
Yes, that is correct.
So I think, from my point of view on the board, I feel very strongly about anything that can harden the system for future fires. So it's up to the staff to figure out if that's a priority or not.
Yeah, and in relation to that, there's some new technology coming out that I want to revisit and test. We might do a different method of that fire prep, a little bit more long-term product out there. We just don't have it on site yet to play with it to see what it's like. Okay. But I just wanted to clarify that the actual pole testing was completed.
Okay, and then the current limiting fuses, I mean, is that going to be in the budget for next year or not?
That's a pretty frustrating topic. Okay. That is tied to the BKI, analysis. I just actually sent them some more reclosure information regarding that project, and they understand what we are doing with trying to put non-limiting current fuses out there. So, that's a frustrating process because it affected several different things that we had planned on doing or moving moving forward with this year. But yes, we get the plan, get the report done, we can dynamically create that project and how we're going to do it and how we're going to roll it out.
Just a thought. I mean, I really like the idea of a systematic, you know, well, since there wasn't really a systematic approach before, a systematic approach to the capital budget projects makes a lot of sense. And I like the idea of having some sort of consistent methodology under which some sort of budget ceiling, the staff could use its discretion to figure that out. That makes a lot of sense. I think there are, if we go toward that model, though, there are some probably fire-related issues as well that may need to be surfaced to the board because it's hard to have a sense of, you're balancing a lot of competing priorities, and I feel like there's a certain level of that absolutely should be up to the staff to do that as long as you're systematically looking at it. But then there are some fire-related items where it's like, you know, if the board is trying to look out for a longer-term risk, that we would just want the visibility into that because, you know, a reliability issue, I mean, we don't have the expertise to really weigh in on some of those issues one way or the other, but when it comes to sort of existential fire risk, that seems like, you know, a board conversation that we want to have about is this something that we sort of, you know, decide we absolutely have to do it, whereas other reliability-related decisions, like, I would feel perfectly happy leaving that to staff discretion.
It's risk tolerance.
Right.
And I think what we would plan on doing as part of that, if you think back to those three items we're looking for, the not just the listing of projects in that 5 to 10 year plan, but then talking about those prioritization metrics.
Yeah,
I don't think that's something that management staff is going to have secret sauce, and we're going to know what's important to us. I think those are good to socialize with the board and get board input on. As you said, some of them may be safety. Some of them may be, you know, hey, if something is fire related and it gets moved up, you know, something like that where the board could really direct on prioritization at a very high level. I think that's important input.
So I don't know if it's appropriate to ask now, Greg, but in your write-up that's in the board book, you know, the meter projects, you said there were 5 replacement projects on the current transformer meters that are extremely high priority, and we budgeted to replace 2 of the 5 in 2022. And if it's extremely high priority, why aren't we budgeting 5 out of 5? And if we don't have the staff to do it, tell the board that we don't have the staff to do it, you know, and figure out a way to take care of what absolutely needs to be done.
And that was another thought I had, which is if a crew is brought in to work on things, how much of that does it make sense for any of that to be customer-related work? Or should that all be system work? Because I know it sounds like contracted crews are going to be, you know, more expensive than our crew. And so there's sort of rate-making implications where, you know, if we put the crew on line extension work that's all CIAC, well, then that's effectively, you know, more cost on the customer-directed work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want contract crews interacting with customers, though. Maybe that's not a good idea. So I think, you know, where we choose to apply it also has some sort of rate and fairness questions as well.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of the meter projects and just candidly saying the extremely high priority when you said that, that could be a wording issue just from yours truly, not necessarily coming from the engineering department. Glenn, you know those projects, the CT meters, Would you classify those as extremely high priority, or did I get way over my ski tips there?
I wouldn't classify them as extreme, but those are targets like commercial applications where we've got an overhead CT, THHN wire that's exposed to the sun that deteriorates, so there's a potential loss for revenue. I can think of off the top of my head, we've got one at the concrete plant, one at Bear Creek Lumber, a couple other commercials in town. We did the Duck brand last year. Those are the ones that we're targeting. It's nothing that we need to do right away, but they do deteriorate from the sunlight. This last year, we concentrated more on some of the upgrades on the irrigation lines because it was an outdated meter form, that wasn't communicating. So they were being manually read on a monthly basis. So we knocked those out. There's a couple more of those. But then the commercial ones are the ones that we're going to attack probably this next year. You know, we discussed it with Mark on prioritizing that. We wanted to basically kind of pick a number, keep it where it was. It's not a staffing issue because most of that is a contractor that we hire to come in and install a CT can, do some plumbing and everything else. Or in the case of the irrigation, come out, install a new meter, get it inspected. And then basically we just go out in time frame and cut it over. CT's got a little bit of Mark's time, which is it's not an over or understaffing issue. It's just that number that we picked because we're just keep chipping away at updating those.
And Glenn, when you say CT meter, you're talking about like big external CTs that are exposed to sunlight. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. Several years ago, about the time when the PUD did, OCEC went to no overhead CTs or CTs on a transformer. But yeah, that's a current transformer that the overhead conductors go through. Then you've got number 12 THHN wire that goes down to the meter head, weather head, down to the meter base. But now everything is enclosed in what's called a CT can or switchgear. So it's basically out of the sunlight. And your CT service on a single phase is anything larger than a 400 amp. On your three-phase service, anything larger than a 200 amp requires to be current transformer metered. It's just a different style of meter.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'm used to. I mean, I think all meters have to have CTs. So the question is just whether they're external to the box itself or not, right?
Yeah. Any self-contained meter, such as a single phase class 200 or single phase class 320 or 400 amp service, all of the current goes through the meter, and that's how it's metered.
Right.
Anything above that, that the self-contained meters cannot accommodate that much current, so it has to be stepped down through a CT.
Yeah.
Same thing with a three-phase, you can go up to a 200 amp. All that current can go through the meter and be metered. Anything above that has to be stepped down because they don't have anything to accommodate.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So, Sarah, I think, as I said, the prioritization of those, like Glenn said, they're items that we want to get done. They're known issues out in the field, and it's mostly contractor work. Not necessarily staffing for those particular meters, but the approach was essentially getting a few of those done a year. But if that's something that, you know, is we could go back and revisit the reliability or revenue risk or any other liability that may have to kind of reprioritize those. And if it poses a bigger risk than we're currently giving it, which is it could survive for another year or two, then we could come back to the board and give an update on that.
And given the supply issues, do we have the technical resources, the equipment, the whatever you want to call it, the
transformers?
The transformers, it's more than transformers.
Well, that's it, but that's the principle.
I mean, do we have what
that's
we need to do these projects?
Are you speaking to the metering ones?
The metering and all of it. I mean, do you have the, can you get what you need to operate next year?
I cannot answer that right now. If you'd asked me that 2 weeks ago, I would have said I was very, very comfortable going into next year's construction season. As I shared with Greg earlier, the way things are shaping up and the information I'm getting from vendors, that's, don't know.
Yeah. So in the memo, can I steal this back?
Yeah.
In the memo itself, it talks specifically about the transformers. not only are they increasing in costs, but lead times. So we've reported previously that kind of our, I'll call it our bread and butter transformer, our 25 kVA pad mount transformer, has gone up about 100%, and the lead times are 32 to 34 week lead time. Some of the quotes we're getting are 14 month lead time for transformers for different products. And I think I'll just say the combination of variables of having a supply chain that was extremely efficient up to about a year ago, where the lead times were approximately 4 to 8 weeks, and our very small footprint have led to the situation where the last two years we've been using whatever has been laying around. And then in combination with that, the lead times have been getting longer and longer. And so we're sitting now, and I think what you heard in Glenn's voice is the kind of uncomfortableness with the unknown of supply chain in general right now. And we're certainly not the only utility dealing with that, but we have our own unique issues where we have, you know, a very rapid growth cycle combined with these issues. And, you know, if we were not setting records for member requested work, if we were not having a really rapid cycle and it was business as usual 2019, I think we'd be less concerned. We'd still be concerned because the lead times would be there.
So, Rick, is this something WRACA members would be able to lend you some materials or sell you some materials?
I think that's an option. As I said, Glenn has contacts with every operations manager within that group there, and he utilizes those contacts really frequently. I think in the info session we talked about Okanagan PUD, which we have some issues with supplies there depending on what we're looking for. Ms. Bielam's in a similar position as us, where I don't think they carry a huge amount of inventory because they have a pretty small footprint. And so it would be reaching out kind of beyond our normal border, but it's certainly a potential where if we run out of something and it's a really dire situation, we at least have a cooperative network to fall back on.
And that's already transpired this construction season. Borrowed materials, purchased transformers from Inland, Nispelum, the neighboring PUD. So yes, that's already ongoing. Probably about once or twice a week, the group that I belong to, we're sending emails out to each other. Where's everybody at with these? Where are they at with that? I've got Inland on the back burner for transformers. Should we run into a major pinch and they've got a surplus because they're a lot bigger than we are, they can carry a lot more stock. Same with Columbia REA, had a transformer available for us. So yes, that's ongoing right now.
Yeah, so kind of jumping to those proposed changes, when we were discussing this with the finance committee, we put a bullet on the transformer budget and said, this item we think can materially change based on quotes we're going to be getting in the coming week or two. And we were correct in at least pointing out that could materially change. So we saw a huge increase in the cost of what we were ordering just to get through next year, and a move from $150,000 to $256,000 in terms of what we are ordering just to feel like we're going to make it through next construction season. As Glenn said, that's probably still an unknown whether what we have on order will actually get us through next construction season. That is a kind of a common theme, I think, through this whole capital budget, is what is our construction season going to look like next year for member work.
A quick question on that. For transformers, does the co-op have any risk of, like, giving a customer a quote and then the price increases a lot and then the co-op gets paid at the lower price? I mean, I think that doesn't happen, but...
That doesn't happen.
Okay.
Yeah, so our our work order process for a member is they get an estimate, they pay in full for that estimate, and then whether it's a refund or an additional invoice, they'll pay the difference between what the work actually cost and that estimate. For transformers specifically, so this is something Glenn and Lynn and I were sitting in our office this morning kind of, you know, working our heads around transformers specifically because transformers... Were you going to say something, Alan?
I think it's Glenn.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot I was not on mute, but I things froze up here and I was just conversing with Karen as to how much bandwidth she was using.
Oh,
sorry.
Alan, I think it was them. It froze for me, too. It wasn't just you.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you, Karen.
Sorry. So transformers purchased for member work are held on our books until such time as they're used for member-requested work, and then we receive a margin on top of that cost. So we've been looking at right now, I think the practice is 30% on top of the transformer cost. We can talk about whether that's appropriate or not when you see a 100% cost increase.
Well, as long as you're rolling through, with reasonable markups over the cost for a specific transformer, it should make a difference.
Yeah. So if we're ordering $250,000 worth of transformers and we go through them next year with a margin on top of them, it's not as big of an issue as if we order $250,000 worth of transformers and nobody decides to take anything from us and they're on our books, they're in our inventory, and they're sitting there. They'll eventually be used down the line, but that is a risk. I would put that risk pretty low being stuck with that much, but that is certainly a risk.
You got to get them first to get them on the board.
Yeah. Yes. So with that change from the Finance Committee version to the proposed version, the original transformer budget went up $106,000. We had three different options that we put in there. The recommended is really just a hybrid, absorb and reduce. So kind of looking through our other capital acquisitions, we identified the Meridian software upgrade. So Meridian is rebranded SEDC. Mm-hmm. That's our accounting software package. They, I think, purchased and merged with the Meridian brand. They have a new release that they're pushing out there for folks to pick up. The majority of that cost, I think 29,000 of the 35, is just licenses. Database licenses or Oracle licenses, I believe. So we've talked about it internally. We don't necessarily think that is something that will be dropped in terms of the old version support next year. And we don't see a pressing need to upgrade a software package right now. So we identified that as something that we could reduce the overall capital budget by $35,000. Won't impair our abilities to function, and we hope that something like a software upgrade we can incorporate in a broader, we'll call it a technology plan in the future, where we're not looking at it as a one-off, but trying to have, similar to a engineering work plan, some idea of what technology we want to invest in. I think that's another common distribution utility plan that you have on the books.
A quick question on that. Is it fair to say that the software upgrade is a marketing thing, like a new suite of functionality as opposed to, you know, patches and updates and things like that? Like, you know, whatever, because there's always this line of, well, is this a new thing that we're opting not to get, or is this... Does it come with security and other updates where it's really not a good idea to not do those things?
I'll give my impression, and I don't know, Lynn, if you want to add anything there too, but my impression was it was a significantly upgraded user interface primarily. perhaps adding to some ease of use. I don't think there was any components or parts of the upgrade that really added anything or any functionality that we don't have, or really unlocking any efficiencies that we can't already access through the existing platform. Was that your impression too, or did you have anything to add
there? I think it's got a, you know, more bells and whistles than we currently have, but as far as security or anything, like that, there's nothing critical there that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Did you guys catch Lynn's comment there?
No.
Alan and Kara?
Yes, we heard it.
Okay. It says our internet connection is unstable, so I apologize. Other options that we had in there that you could discuss, one, just absorbing the increase, so it results in a higher overall capital budget, and then one looked at a complete reduction in that increase. So we identified the Meridian software upgrade, and we also identified a planned truck replacement, a planned fleet replacement, approximately $60,000. So it doesn't get it one for one, but that is, if the board is looking at maintaining that original budget level, then that's an option as well.
Are you asking for a board position on these options, or are you?
So I think overall, because we're not asking for approval for this capital budget in this board meeting, what I'd be looking for is leanings, feedback. You know, if there's initial reactions to one of these three options, or if there's more information that you think that you would need in order to decide between the three options, that's what I'd be looking for today.
I think your recommendation makes sense to me. I think that's a good idea. Maybe I'm being optimistic, but I have the feeling that the next year or two, some of the supply chain issues will work out, and costs may not go back to where they were before, but it seems like it could be lower than what we currently have. That was the case with lumber, at least.
I concur also with the recommendation. I think, you know, for one thing, there's so much uncertainty in the amount of must-do work we have, the consumer work, and whether we have fires and storms and so on. And this difference is kind of small compared to that big thing. I think the crux really for me is identifying the capital projects that are most urgent and making sure we don't put those off and get in trouble either from having failures on the system or from having a sudden backlog that takes way too much money all of a sudden. So I'm drifting a little bit, but I think this absorb and reduce proposal that management's come up with is, I would support that.
So if I understand correctly, you're projecting BKI results to come in Q1?
That would be the hope, yeah. And I think they told us by the end of the calendar year, but Q1 is probably a more reasonable estimate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the project to put all the outstanding capital expenditures into the bucket with whatever BKI has to say, and then building priorities and being able to rationalize your list shortly after that. If you could do that early in the year, I think that we can reduce stress. So, mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's what your plan is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only other comment I'd make is, I haven't asked what you can do with current inventory, particularly transformers, but I sort of hate to run out. Even if borrowing from inland or whatever other source, you might consider putting in orders on the margin with some accommodation for canceling if the lead times really are 14, 16, 18 months.
I mean, if it's that much of a lead time, my confidence in the supplier's ability to deliver on that would just drop. Like, what's to stop them from 6 months in? So, oh, sorry, we didn't get it. You know, like if they say 12 weeks, that sounds reasonable. If they say 50 weeks, it's like, that's just the guess. You know, I wouldn't have a lot of faith in that.
Yeah, but at least it potentially gets you in line.
That's true.
You know, if more big fires in California, I mean, how many transformers does that suck up per year?
Yeah, right.
I mean, hopefully you'd have enough weight to hold your position in line rather than PG&E coming along and saying, well, you know, get rid of those guys.
Well, and that's what I think is happening throughout the supply chain now is the big customers always get their orders filled first. And it doesn't matter when you place the order. If there's someone bigger that's more important to the survival of the supplier, they meet their needs first. And so, you know, Walmart's a great buyer right now. Everyone else is in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I don't want to say that's immoral for a supplier to do that, but I would hope the more honorable suppliers maintain lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, to me, it sounds like staff and Greg are totally up to date on what the issues are, and I think that they've informed the board adequately, and you just have to go with their recommendations and see if it's going to work out.
And if this last month is any indication, we'll come into next month with some new information, hopefully on the positive instead of the negative. So we're still waiting to hear from our traditional supplier, ERMCO, based out of New Orleans, whether they're taking orders for 2023 or not. So in the vein of getting in line well in advance, that's certainly something we're looking into. So this is busy, but it's for those who like numbers, and this is trying to take that bigger budget that has the line items that looks similar to that capital project worksheet and really summarize it down to the major buckets that we're looking at and compare that both on a budget basis and an actual basis across 2018 to year-to-date 2021. And then it shows the variance between budget and actual for those just to get a sense of where we were budgeting, what happened, and what the differences are. So this you could stare at if you want. I think I jokingly said I made this table just for Alan in the finance committee. He's given a thumbs up. So I have some visuals that I pulled from here, but in general what you're looking at is line item for member requested work, a capital projects total, so that is all the system improvement projects plus the member requested work, and then you're looking at CIAC coming off of that. So member requested work and CIAC are they offset each other. Below that, net capital projects is basically the total capital minus the CIAC. Capital acquisitions, so those are the other items we're talking about, transformers, meters, fleet, other things like that. And then if you add the net capital projects plus the capital acquisitions, that's your total capital budget. Some of the big items that I'll just highlight, the variances on CIAC for 2020 and 2021 year to date are large. You saw our CAAC jump from 2019 was about 370,000 to 765 to year to date in end of September at 806. So we're getting a lot of cash coming in for member work.
And are the average sizes of those going up as well in addition to the volume?
And so we were looking at that with Glenn this morning. He was commenting that he thought 2021 was actually an outlier year in terms of individual large projects. we just completed two individual projects that were both $50,000 for one member. And I think there was another project out at Palm Construction, I believe, that was close to that number. Hmm. And so we've had very, very large individual projects come in this year, which I think is not typical to have multiple $50,000 single member projects, but we have had that. Hmm. So these are charts that pull off of data from that that table. So for those folks who like the visual aspect, could walk through some of these. This is just looking at member work as a percent of capital projects. So those are the system improvements plus member work equals total capital projects. Blue is budgeted and orange is actual. So we don't have enough actual through our paperwork system to give a good estimate for 2021 quite yet. But you can see the swings there. So the budget's been pretty steady. And one thing that I want to highlight, and I'll make sure that we're aware of it as we're working through that, is when I've said we increased our budget for member work and increased our budget for CIAC, you'll see that specifically on this chart. So moving from mid 30% for member work as a percent of total up to almost 60%. This is how much CIAC, budget versus actual. So again, blue is budget and orange is actual. That red dot that I put on there is the current estimate for where we think we're going to land for 2021. So you could see this huge variance in what's being budgeted and what's actually being coming in through the door for member requested work. You could see when I've described our budget as kind of a midpoint between what we've seen in the last 2 years and what was budgeted for the last 2 years, that's where it's coming in at, just right kind of in the mid 500s.
Well, would you expect much more CIAC money to come in this year?
We didn't think so because we kind of cut it off. We said we couldn't do any more jobs, but we had a few stragglers that we received half of the funds. So there's a little more coming in, yes.
Okay. But it shouldn't continue this
giant,
literally straight up line.
Because we're not accepting anymore.
Yeah.
And
we would have if we...
My small little project is going to be kicked to next year anyway, so there's an example of CIAC money that the co-op has but is kicked to next year because mm-hmm. I can't get an electrician. So
before the end of the year, though, we'll start calling and seeing, do you want your money back?
Mm-hmm. This is looking at capital projects budget. So this is looking at member work plus system improvements all together, and you can see that the budget has kind of come up through the years. The actuals have been fairly consistently above the budget, so we've been spending a bit more in capital on the capital projects side. As compared to budget, you'll see that it's come down a little bit for this budget process. And then this is total capital budget. So this is the capital projects plus the capital acquisitions, transformers, meters, etc. So this is kind of the bottom line number, if you will. And you could see in 2020, when you have a very large influx of CIAC, that's up and above the actual work you get done, that will drive your capital total capital budget down because it's an offset. It's, the customers are essentially giving us cash, and it's going on our books. And again, I don't think have enough information right now to give a year to date. We have a lot of work orders that got done in the last month that are still making its way through the pipeline to hit our books. And so we anticipate, very similar to the last couple years, that November and December will have some pretty big moves on the capital side. Not because of work being done, but because of paperwork actually coming through and getting processed.
Mm-hmm. Greg, to what extent do our fluctuations in capital work cause more or less crew time to be spent on operational expenses? I would expect the operation expenses would be pretty much fixed, but I wonder if there's any trade-off in there.
All right, so I'm going to give my perspective, but because I've only been here for half of one construction season, I might ask Lynn and Glenn to throw in as well. But I think that my observation has been that the last 2 years have every moment that the crew could be during construction season has been spent on member projects, and those are capitalized items. And unless it's for something like an outage or some form of maintenance or, you know, work getting a line back in place. I think today we had a tree fall on one of the phases out towards Mazama, for example. Those are the one-off things that I think will pull the crew from primarily capital work during the construction season.
That and weather.
Yeah.
There's a big impact on operations.
When can you start and when do you have to stop?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, in the
wintertime
they're trimming trees.
Yeah, yeah. So
just to rephrase my question for clarification. So if we have significantly less customer work, would we do more operations and maintenance, or would it be pretty much totally more other capital projects?
That's a great question. That is one of the primary issues of increasing the amount of member requested work and corresponding CIAC is because the customers are essentially funding that work. We'll throw out a scenario, and I think I touch on this later in the slides, but it's appropriate here, is what would we do if customer work completely stopped in 2022? Where would that crew time go? Would we suddenly be saddled with more expense, or would we be turning that into system improvements and capital projects? And I think because we've had a couple years of backlog of system improvements, I think the answer there is we would prioritize the system improvements, and it wouldn't go straight towards go trim some trees or go clear some right away. I think the priority there would always, during the construction season for me, would always be doing the capital work for system improvements. But it is an open issue when we're increasing our reliance in the total capital budget on the member work side, which is funded by the members, to have at least that scenario in mind, and how would we adjust in that year if that were to happen. So we talked about the BKI study. This is really looking at some short and long-term issues. We talked about the uncertainty behind member requested work. We're carrying more projects into 2022 than we did into 2021. So again, we anticipate that this is going to be 2022 is going to be a heavy member requested work year. Short-term issue, and this is something that we'll talk about when we look at the fully baked budget, but can we continue to fund the capital program 100% from rates? So if you have $800,000 coming in from members, probably pretty easy to cover the rest. If that dries up, the work needs to be funded from something. So that's a discussion we'll need to have. And then, Sarah, you touched on this, but long-term we'll always need to probably have these long-term looks, but contemplate current staffing levels, use of outside contractors. If we want to efficiently execute on our capital plan, probably a blend of contractors and appropriate amount of inside staff that we have year-round is necessary. I think it's common in other distribution cooperatives to have maybe one or two projects which are 100% outside contractor driven. I'll give an example. If we have to go out and replace a bunch of transformers or do work on the Mazama circuit, where it's somebody out in a bucket truck just going down the highway doing work on the poles or a big pole replacement, those are great opportunities in my head for a contractor work to come in and do that while our crews focus on the member work and customer facing type of engagement. And then places to store the inventory. So we're getting creative. We have some things in the budget this year to get creative with the space we have. I do think a larger facilities plan is going to be necessary looking into the future. So that's a long-term issue that just want to throw out and put on the plate. That's something we should not put on the back burner, but ensure that we're not putting so many Band-Aids on something that it's getting overlooked as a whole broader, bigger solution being the best long-term option for us. In that vein, this is really just looking at a couple pictures. Hopefully you recognize this area. This is our footprint right now. It looks a little bit different, but some of the things we wanted to highlight was that we have a wire rack system in there. So this is in the red. This is the area that we'd like to install the new wire rack system with two levels of wire storage. We're going to keep these clear for the standby employees' parking spots. And then we're going to keep this clear for fleet parking. And then we have two things over here. We have a container built into the budget. Right now we're calling it for storm supplies, but it's just another kind of dry storage, easily accessible place where we could put inventory and put things that are necessary without kind of expanding the footprint. The idea here is that anything we're investing in is either something we could turn around and sell if it doesn't fit into our long-term plan or be part of our long-term plan. So we're not doing anything permanent that might remove options down the road. And then the last thing we have internal to the shop is replacing this old wood rack system with, you'll notice, the transformer system, something similar. So we'd be looking at taking this custom-built job here and making it more kind of off-the-shelf to increase our storage there. So again, this is in the vein of we're trying to get creative with the footprint we have. But I do think you can only go so far, and I think looking long term is something that we should take another stab at and see if there's something we could find that works long term. And we've talked a lot about this, but these are the questions that I had highlighted. One potential option that we can look at if the amount of member work in CIAC is causing heartburn is looking at reducing that back down to 2021 levels and then really just increasing the system improvements bucket of work. So it'd be about a $185,000 reduction to member work and about $200 to CIAC. We're moving system improvements up by about $185,000. What does that do? That puts basically the capital budget a little bit more on the front burner of OCEC needs to raise the cash to meet this capital budget as opposed to relying on members to fund the capital budget. So it could have a different look on how we treat this capital budget and the overall picture. Meaning it might require, if we do that, it might put us in a position of identifying that we might need to borrow for some capital items to make it through 2022 and still be cash positive. throw that out as a potential option, something to chew on, something to get feedback on, but not what we're recommending. We're recommending the levels that we put out there.
So, Greg, just so I'm clear on this, are you suggesting in the possibility of reducing the customer work in the budget that we would actually do less customer work than customers want?
No, so this would be it'd be almost maintaining what we've done in the last 2 years, which is have a lower amount budgeted, but if more member work comes in the door, then that's still the priority, and we would essentially take planned time dedicated to system improvements and shift it over real time into member work like we've done in the last 2 years. So it would look similar to the budget versus actual that we've seen in 2020 and 2021, where you have a lower amount budgeted for member work, but we may in reality still anticipate a pretty high level of actual spending there. But we're not on a budget basis relying on customer cash to fund that portion of our capital budget.
It seems to me that, I like what you're contemplating doing with the capital budget, and I think this sort of middle ground is probably the best way to go, but nothing we do about our budgeting or the format of the budget or the amounts in the budget is going to change the uncertainty as to how much member work there is to be done, and also emergency work, like if we had another big fire storm or whatnot. So the fact is we're going to have an uncertain amount of the projects we get to do out of our non-customer project list. If there's less customer work, we'll get more of our stuff done and vice versa. And of course, we can ameliorate that by bringing in contractors and hiring new people. But it seems like the flip side of trying to budget the expense, where, we know it's going to be more, could be a lot more or a lot less than what we put in the budget. The flip side is budgeting the cash received, the CIA cash coming in. And there it seems like the consequences of missing are a little bit asymmetrical, where if we budget low and get a lot more money in, we're going to be more cash flush than we expected. Whereas if we budget high and for some reason the work turns down, then we might have a cash shortage compared to our budget. And that might be the least desirable part of things. I mean, we have plenty of borrowing capacity, so it's not a disaster. But I think we need to look at the cash flow implications of our budgeting as well as just the uncertainty of what sort of system work we get done.
Yeah, but Alan, doesn't it make sense to you to budget with your best guess estimation, in this case, of what customer work is going to look like? I mean, that in a sense gives you the more accurate or apropos view of risk if the bottom does fall out of customer work.
Well, I agree. I think we want to make our best reasonable estimate. But, there's some things you budget for, and you can pretty much hit the budget. It's just that's how much you've decided you're going to spend. But on this capital budget, there's this huge uncertainty of how much customer work is going to be required. So I think there it's really important for us to realize that whatever number we decide in our budget, that's not a commitment to what we're going to do. It's just a best guess, and it's going to be more or less. And the crux is if it ends up being a lot less, we might have a big shock to our cash flow, too.
Yeah, but
I still think the middle ground is probably the best way to go.
I think it is helpful to budget as accurately as you can forecast so that you recognize what the risk is if you, in this case, undershoot on customer work, if it doesn't come through.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm trying to say is, we want to make the most reasonable budget we can at this point, estimate. And I think that sounds like what we're doing. We're being somewhat conservative by choosing the middle ground, I think. And maybe you're saying we should budget higher for it. But We just need to realize we're probably going to be way off, no matter what. Well, we could be way off no matter what we decide because of the uncertainty.
But Alan,
and we need to look at the consequences of being off, up or down.
But Alan, I think the comment that you just made is that our borrowing ability is strong right now. Should we miss this number? So I firmly support the middle ground on here. You know,
well,
it's an okay way to be.
While it's true that we currently have the borrowing capacity, looked at it in a slightly longer term, you've got so much borrowing capacity that you want to potentially apply to a number of capital projects. You know, capital work being OCEC stuff aside, you know, there's the subject of what capital we might provide for electrification purposes, what capital we might provide for broadband projects, as an example. So you want to be careful that you have as good a picture of what each component's usage of capital is, so that you have the best chance of allocating capital and giving enough investment to get something done in other areas besides just co-op-related infrastructure projects.
So I'm confused about whether we're talking about the capital budget or cash flow or both. Because it seems to me that the risk of overestimating CIAC has no cost. Like, if we throw a pin against the wall and say, oh, it's $1.2 million next year, well, and then it ends up being $700,000, so what, right? It's prepaid anyway, and so if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Like, it doesn't seem like there's a risk to us because they're paying for it. So I guess I'm confused on this intersection between.
So the deal is, Michael, that if consumer work falls off dramatically, we do less consumer work, and therefore we do more of our capital projects. We have less cash coming in from CIAC, but we're still spending money on our crews working, so
and therefore
we put more of our own money is going to be going into our own projects, yes, which eventually we're going to have to do anyway.
So the implication of that is you have to borrow that money because you don't have the cash.
Yeah,
but you want it. So you want to use the crew.
So the cash flow depends to a great deal on how much CIC, how much customer work we do.
Right, but it just seems like you're squeezing, you know, whether it's 35% of all the capital projects are customer related or 65%. I don't know. I guess it doesn't.
But well, if it's between 35% and 65%, I mean, that could be $350,000 to $400,000 of cash.
It does
not
go
in,
back to cash flow, but I think we need to say we're okay with the middle. And let staff give us the budget, the whole budget with the cash flow in it.
Yeah, my point that I really want to make was that I support that middle deal, but I think we all need to understand that it could be significantly different, up or down.
Right.
Yeah, this question is going to be a lot more relevant when we start to hit our, you know, more towards our maximum borrowing capacity.
Right. It's and with low interest rates right now, it just seems sort of like a costless.
Yeah, but
consideration.
Yeah. But those capital expenditures could come sooner than you might think.
Yeah.
So.
Good discussion. I appreciate it. I think that's all I had for the capital budget item, and have some notes, and then. And then we'll go back and digest what we've heard, and anything one-off that's thought of after this meeting, feel free to reach out as well.
Thank you.
All I can say is I'm excited to see that holistic budget. Operations and Javelin put together.
We all are.
So is that it for the discussion item on capital budget? Mm-hmm. So next point of discussion, I believe we're talking about...